Log Talk Radio.
Blocks from the White House. I grew up at 16th and Cochran Street, Northwest. And I actually could hear things when I was like a kid. I could hear bumblebees in flight. I could hear the flapping of a butterfly's wings. And not only could I hear this stuff, I could make the same sounds. I could make the same sounds as them. And I didn't realize what a gift it was when I was that young, you know. But I knew the bumblebees made it evident that they knew that who I was, because they just wanted to be around me all the time, like I was a great big old giant pollen lollipop. And I was like, oh, what? I mean, you guys are nice and all, you know, one of God's creatures and all that, but I have no desire to be your friend. I used to hear the sound of crickets. And I would go in my house at night. My mother and father would think that crickets were in the house. But
well,
it was me making
crickets. You could imitate crickets, or you could just hear.
All kind of bugs. See, I, at that time, I didn't know that I could also imitate people. So it wasn't until I started doing my neighbors, and people would be like, oh, my God, you sound just like Miss So-and-so. You sound just like And I went when I went to school, I would imitate my teachers and the principal, and they found it absolutely fascinating. And eventually, as I was watching TV, I could imitate some of the people on TV. And my siblings would say, oh, my God, you sound just like them. And in the meantime, I was singing. I've been singing my whole life, but a lot of people don't know that I'm a singer as well. But I figured there were so many women who were singers, but very few comedians. Very few women could do impressions. Very, very few. So I decided to take that road because I felt like I had more of an opportunity. You know, I had more of a chance of being recognized as an impressionist more so than a singer. That's how all that started off.
Wow. So you've been doing it a long, long time. Tell us a little bit what it is to be a comedian. I mean, because people think they can do it, but they really can't do it. Talk about what it is to be a comedian.
When I first started doing comedy, and because there were very few women, people weren't at that time thinking, you know, now everybody thinks they're a comedian for the most part. Not, you know, most people think. Funny, you know, they go to a cookout, say a few things, and the people around them, they're laughing. You should be a comedian. And so a lot of people go for being a comedian. But it's more than that. It's so much more than that. It's you have to know about timing. You have to know about situations, how you're going to handle or how you should handle a situation if it arises. And sometimes those situations are unavoidable and you don't even know they're coming. So it's like having a fifth sense of how to react in certain situations and make it funny at the same time.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's basically what that is for me, my interpretation. That's what it is. Yeah.
Tell us, Sylvia, what is comedians today different from comedians of yesterday? What makes comedians now work? Because at one time, you could not see a comedian unless you went to a comedy show. Now you have all these comedians all over the internet. I mean, what makes a comedian so successful today when it was so hard yesterday to be a comedian?
Well, you basically wrapped it up when you know, you were, it's basically, I've been watching comics, Russell, for 6 decades, and each time it changes. Each decade, as far as I'm concerned, the way I watch it, it changes. It's like today is the time for internet comedians, especially with this raging pandemic taking place. You know, you don't really have an opportunity to perform in clubs. There are some comedians who still do shows, and my thing is with COVID, I'm okay. I can sit back and watch comedy or perform comedy virtually, because COVID is evil. It's a demon. I'm telling you, people think it's a joke. Not all people, but you know, a lot of people think it doesn't exist. It's not harmful. It is absolutely horrible. Horrible. So I think that today are taking advantage of being seen by millions at a time during the course of a day or two. I've seen comics put up a bit on the internet, and you know, the next day it's like they have 700,000 views. That's 700,000 people that may have seen them, and they start to follow you, and there you go.
So you can become a successful comedian just by putting up a YouTube video? You can become famous as a comedian?
Not even as a YouTube video. You can just have your own page. Yeah, you can become famous. There are many comedians I know who are now, we wouldn't have known about it if it wasn't for social media. We would not have known.
That's very interesting, because it seems like you'd have to work on your craft, write your jokes, make sure that people want to see you in person before you can become a successful comedian. But you're saying you can do that now just by being on the internet.
Well, yeah, you can do that now by being on the internet. And actually, because of the climate that we're in right now with the virus, nobody's. Basically, you know, you're not going to have huge audiences coming to see you anyway. Now, I've seen a couple of places like the MGM Grand. I think they've had a couple of comedy shows there. And me personally, because of the climate, I just don't want a chance going to something that big with that many people. I don't want to knock anybody's thing, but, you know, no thanks. I know what it is to have COVID. I had COVID and pneumonia at the same time. At the same time, so nope, I'll pass.
You are a COVID survivor. Tell us about how you got the COVID and what it took to get rid of the COVID.
Russell, when I tell you, in the audience, ladies and gentlemen, when I almost get stuck when I try to talk about COVID, because I have no clue where I got it, no clue how I got it, no clue who gave it to me. have no, or what gave it to me. I have no idea. And I remember when I first started having the symptoms, it was more like, almost felt like a baby flu, like it was the flu. I had aches and pains. I was nauseous. I could hardly talk. My throat was sore. My head was hurting. My whole body was full of aches and pains. And I lost my, I actually didn't lose my taste and smell until I had been diagnosed. I knew something was wrong, but I was praying and hoping it wasn't COVID. So I went to the hospital because I was just too sick. And I thought that was sick. Oh, my God. They diagnosed me, and the doctor came and told me quickly that I had pneumonia. And I was thinking, oh, my God, to myself, pneumonia can kill you. And then shortly after they took my COVID test, she said, and you also have COVID. And, do you know, they sent me home because there wasn't nothing else they could do for me at the hospital. And I'm thinking, I'm so sick. And that wasn't even the first part of the sickness. My sickness kept escalating as each day went by. Then I lost my taste buds. I couldn't smell anything. And the only taste buds I had, anything I tried to eat, any medicine I tried to take, a saltine cracker was bad. It all tasted like vomit. I'm sorry to be so descriptive. So sorry, but it did. It did. Everything smelled and tasted like vomit. Can you imagine all day long that's all you smell and you can't even eat because it tastes like vomit? And then the nauseousness. Yeah, I wrote a book, Russell. I wrote a book about it after I got well. It was I entitled it "Me, Satan, God, and COVID-19," because all four of us were in my room together at the same time.
So how's the book doing? How can we get the book? And where do you publish the book? And do you have a website for the book?
Well, the book's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you want an autographed copy, you can go to my website, which is sylviaoyeah.com. And I'll spell it for you. It's SYLVIAOHYEAH, sylviaoyeah.com. I knew that I had to write the book when I wrote it because I didn't want to forget everything. Russell, when I tell you that COVID thing is evil and a demon, I'm telling you, it is so... And especially for seasoned people. Seasoned people, it is so... That's why they put them at high risk. Because it's... You can't have any visitors. You can't have nobody do anything for you because nobody can come around you.
Well, it really is a serious, serious virus. I'm in quarantine, Sylvia. I'm in pajamas every day, pajamas and bedroom slippers. I don't go nowhere. I have Amazon and Instacart and Deer Park. They bring everything to the front door. I just can't take the risk because I'm 72 years old. I'm 72 years old.
Yeah.
And I got a little weight problem, a little high cholesterol. I mean, I can't take the risk. The virus jump on me. If I jump on me, it'll be curtains for me, and all people are going to say,
yeah,
what happened to Russell? Well, you know, he caught the virus and died. I mean, nobody gives a rat's behind, and people like to say can't come see you in the hospital. They can't. And if you live alone like myself, you don't have contact with human beings to even take care of you if you got the virus. So I can't take the virus chance. I can't take it. I just won't take it. I'm going to, you know, work on my health. I want to be what I call in the right frame of mind, 2023 or 2024, when I can get back out. I try to make sure I, you know, work out a little bit on my bike and try to do things, you know, but I'm telling people right now, it's no joke. You have to be what I call serious about the virus. Don't take the virus for granted.
Right.
The virus will take you out.
Mm-hmm.
It will take you out.
Mm-hmm.
So when you quarantined yourself, and was it painful going through the virus to get recovery from the virus?
Russell, in the book, I try to describe the horror associated with it. You know, pain is one thing, horror is another. Horror. I'm talking, I'll do another description that I'll share with you. I don't want to give you everything in there because I don't want the public to know the whole story before they get a chance to read it. But I will tell you this part. Whenever I needed to use the bathroom, and I'm sure other people who've had it can identify with me. If you hold your baby finger out and curve it over a little bit, you doing that? Are you doing that? When you go to move your waist, for me it was like little black snakes, and it looked like they were moving around in the commode. I said, what is going on with this thing? What is this? And I will say this. Hope is everything. For me, hope is everything. Because they don't have any medicine you can take to help with COVID. Now, they can give you something for your nauseousness. They can give you something for your pains, you know, because you get up little pains and stuff. But for the most part, it's like how about this? You want to lay down so you can feel better, and that's when COVID makes its biggest attack. Is when you're laying down, thinking that you're resting yourself. You have to try with everything you have to get up and walk around a little bit. Just don't be in the bed 24 hours. I know people who have had COVID, and they said the first 3 days they couldn't get out of the bed, and they got sicker. Well, that's what it does. COVID loves when you're in the bed doing nothing, because that's when it has its opportune time to attack.
Well, I tell you, Sue, if I had the COVID-19, and I know several people who have gotten it, I know people
mm-hmm.
who have died from it.
Yeah.
I know people who, they didn't have it. They've got the COVID, and they never recovered fully from the COVID. They still
right.
have the after effects of the COVID, you know.
Yeah.
Telling me, you know, yes. you gotta build your immune system up. You have to take some supplements, and you gotta take this garlic, and you gotta take this vitamin E, and make sure you get your supplements. And so the person asked me, says, what are you taking? Are you taking your supplements? What are you taking to prevent the COVID-19 to jump on you? I said, I'm going to tell you what I'm taking. I'm taking isolation. I said, isolation is what I'm taking. I said, I don't let nobody near me. I went to the doctor about 3 months ago. Had a little pain, and they gave me my COVID test, ran my blood work, and X-rays, and I walked out of there with a bill of health to know that I was virus free. And I said, the virus can't get me because I'm virus free, and the only way it can get me is if I try to see somebody, and I'm not going to see somebody. So I'm telling people right now, the virus is no joke, but there'll be time to see yourself in the future with somebody or around somebody. I mean, everybody, I got to do this, I got to do that. Somebody wants to do a baby shower. They want to do a drive-by this, drive-by that. Well, you can drive-by and die. So you got to realize
mm-hmm.
that, hey, it's no joke. Anybody gets some people is immune. You know, they get the virus on them, the virus jumps right back off of them. But some people can't stand the virus at all. You got a lot of fans on. I'm doing this Facebook Live also, the podcast this morning. I'm live broadcasting live on Facebook. One of our newsmaker line, the one and only Sylvia Tremor Morrison. she was one of the first comedians to even write for Saturday Night Live, a black female comedian. She has performed.
Actually, I was the first one. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You was the first. You are the first black female comedian to write for Saturday Night Live. Tell us why Saturday Night Live is still running strong in 2021. How is that particular comedic show running that long?
Well, I know I got with them. They were very young. They were about 4 years old in the 1970s. And I think what has happened down through the years, there's no competition. They don't really have any other comedy shows at that time of night on a Saturday. So you have, when they first started out, they were just hilarious, incredibly, just absolutely hilarious. New faces, new material, new presentations. It was just amazing. And I think that there's so many people who don't go out on Saturday night. So that's their party. You turn on, welcome to NBC this Saturday night. You know, and it was a lot of people just turn it on, whether they watch it or not, and it became an iconic show. So it's so iconic that when you say them, as a matter of fact, when people announced that I was, you know, the first associate writer there, black woman, I get all kinds of questions, you know, what it was like. I was there when with John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, Jane Kerr, you know, the original group, Garrett Morris. As a matter of fact, it was like today it's almost impossible to get an interview with them to see if you're somebody that they'd like to come on. I was fortunate back then that Garrett Morris took me to NBC to meet Lorne Michaels, who was the executive producer then and is still the executive producer. So that was a blessing. You know, during my entire career, it's been every time something happens, it's like a major blessing, because who gets to tour with Whitney Houston in 23 cities? Well, nobody now, but I'm just saying, you know, back then it's like Whitney was the biggest singer of her time. She was just an amazing singer. And she took me on the road with her for 23 cities, 23 major United States cities. And when I reflect back on some of that stuff, Russell, it's like, wow, God was in my corner. You know, he was really looking out. So still is, basically. You know, I'm doing a documentary which houses information about a place back in California called Fat Tuesdays, where comedians, most of the comedians that people know today, they would frequent this particular club. And the documentary includes myself, Dave Chappelle, Eddie Murphy, Monique, the Chris's, Chris Rock, Chris Thomas, and Chris Tucker, Guy Tori. It's a big documentary. And I'm like, I'm just so thrilled that I've been asked to be a part of it. It's like, well, cool. Great. Wonderful.
Well, Sylvia, and I can attest to this, anything to do with comedians, how could they have the audacity, the utmost gall to leave you out? I mean, when you start something and you create something, people have to recognize creativity. Creativity is undefeated. People can steal stuff, or they can try to do what you do, or they can pretend to say they this or that. But when you are a creative individual, I can attest to that myself by being in publishing over 40 years, because I have a creative mind. I can create things. I can make up something in a heartbeat. I've had 4 magazines when there was no magazines before that even continue to do what I did. Russell's News, the Washington Business Guide, the City Guide, and now Be There Magazine. I was online 20 years ago. Nobody wanted to be online 20 years ago. Sylvia out there would say, don't put me online. I don't want to be on that Facebook. And now people understand that it's a viable avenue of what they call promotion and networking.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about comedians stealing jokes. Why do comedians steal other comedians' jokes, and why comedians don't like that?
You know, that has been an ongoing comic nightmare since I can remember, and probably way before my time. I think a lot of times comics steal people's jokes because they're so good and they're so, like, just on top of all the other jokes that they have, that they think they can take your joke and go to another city or go to another venue or whatever and use it, and nobody will ever find out. And the problem with that is, let's say you wrote a joke and you've been fine-tuning it, and finally you got it down, and then the comic comes along, and they hear you, and they have a show in Atlanta. So they go down to Atlanta, it's your joke, and they're on TV with it. Then you come down to Atlanta, and you do the same joke, and they'll think that you stole it from them. You know, the public will think that you stole so-and-so's joke, when that's not true. So-and-so stole yours, and they happen to use it somewhere where you weren't, and then you go down there and do it. They do it. You know, they've done it on there have been fights. I'm talking physical fights about people stealing other people's material and getting called for it when they know they wrote the joke and they know that so-and-so stole it and started doing it. So it's that's been an ongoing stealing is like a little teeny baby COVID. Little teeny baby COVID.
Well, you know, you have some comedians, Sylvia, is so unique. People don't even think about stealing a joke. Like, for instance, Richard Pryor, he was a comedic that told some kind of story. So people couldn't really, you know, steal that joke because it was about his life. Or you have some comedians like a Robin Williams. He's so quick-witty, you know, he's a fast thinker. It comes to his head so fast that a comedian trying to steal that joke would be kind of hard. Or somebody like Ralphie May came along from a TV show, Last Comic Standing, but he parlayed that into being a real comedian. But his gift was that he was a big guy and he was quick. He could tell you some situations that was about him. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. He was I find it amazing how some comics have earned or learned or just received the gift, their gifts that stretch out to so many other different venues and so forth.
Tell us right now, Sylvia, 2021, where do you see comedy shows going? Like, is the Improv or the Comedy Connection or comedy venues, Dangerfield, will they ever come back to be those kind of venues where people flock to see a comedian standing flat-footed on a stage? Do you realize that there's no black comedy club in the District of Columbia or Maryland, D.C.? Why is that, Sylvia? Why is there no black comedy club in this area?
Well, I know that for a while, there were a couple. There were a couple. I know that they had the Solar Comedy. That, I believe, was spearheaded by Greg Poole and Andy Evans. That was around for a while. And, you know, Chris Thomas has tried over and over again to have comedy clubs. I don't know if it's location. I'm not, you know, I really don't know. But I do know that the Improv has been standing strong for quite a while. And then you had the Riot Act that came on, which was a fabulous club. But it was a diverse a comedy club, if you want to say that, because it's always been a little difficult for black women, or women, period, actually, to be honest. It's like you just don't, they, most of the clubs, even the promoters today, they basically promote men. It's not like a normal, a normalcy when 90% of your audiences are women. And I find that amazing. So, I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, comedy is going to come back and come back strong. While the COVID-19 is in effect, or COVID-19 is here, comedians can go online. They can do YouTube. They can do Twitter. They can do all the things to do. There's a couple of comedians that have their YouTube channels, and people subscribe to it, and people pay to hear them talk or hear them do the commercials or do the comedic aspect. They pay. If you're funny, you're funny. You cannot stop funny. Funny is undefeated. If you're funny, you're going to survive. If you're mediocre, or you're not that funny, or you're stealing jokes, or you're acting like you ain't got no sense, then you're not going to survive. But the comedians that withstand the test of time is a comedian like a Chris Rock. Chris Rock is older now.
Mm-hmm.
But he understood that there's upcoming comedians that's going to be better than him. So now what he does is collaborate with that comedian. Let's do something together, because you have an audience,
yeah,
and you have a format, and you're funny. So let's do something,
right,
together. You know,
mm-hmm,
when some comedians are so egotistical, they don't want to do nothing with nobody, or they'll try to backstab somebody instead of saying, hey, that's what the Kings of Comedy was about. When they put the Kings of Comedy about, they put the best of the comedy at that time, and it blew up. They did a movie,
mm-hmm,
and the tours was off the chain. The white guy who did the You Might Not Be a Redneck, he saw the potential of doing a show with rednecks, and he had,
mm-hmm,
a show that was bigger than the comedy of the Kings of Comedy. He sold stadiums out. He put the best of those comics together, the man with no sleeves, and he just put those comics together and did a tour for rednecks.
Mm.
Rednecks came up.
So
it's all about honing in on your craft at this point. When it comes to impressions, by you being a female doing impressions, that had to be something that was so phenomenal, because you had George Kirby, or you had Sammy Davis Jr.,
yeah,
you had all these people doing impressions, but no female was doing impressions.
Right. And you know what's
so
sad?
So when you started
about
doing that, it was a big to-do.
Yeah. But I will tell you this, and someone pointed it out to me. And they said, Sylvia, you know, you being a black female impressionist, I'm surprised that all of these shows that have the male impressionists, Tom Joyner, Steve Harvey, you know, all these talk shows that have, they bring on the male impressionists, why haven't they reached out to you? And I thought about it, and I said, the only big radio nationally syndicated was Erica Campbell and Griff. They brought me on this show, 104.1. I think that's a Radio 1 station. And when my folks reached out to Tom Joyner's show, and his people decided that they didn't, you know, they weren't interested because, you know, they already had their likes of who they wanted for an impressionist. Never seen me before, ever. And Steve Harvey, his people just never answered. And now I'm getting calls from, I think because COVID has a lot of people home, and like you said, they're watching YouTube and all of this other good stuff. they're starting to see things that they've never seen in the past. So now I'm getting all these calls from all across, not the country, but the world, saying, where have you been? How come we don't know about you? Well, I'm thankful. I'm just thankful. I'll say that because I don't want to sound disturbed or anything like that. At my local United States big people like Tom Joyner and Steve Harvey and that crew and Donnie Simpson. So it's, you know, it's incredible.
What are some of your best impressions? Who are you basically known for that is very good? They can hardly tell it's not that person. Give us a sample of some of your best impressions.
Well, you know, I have what I think are my best impressions, and then the public has told me, you know, you kind of know from their response, from their, you know, from their notes that they send you. Like people will say, oh, my God, I could close my eyes and I knew it was Whoopi Goldberg. Or I could close my eyes and I could hear Monique. Or I could close my eyes and I could hear Patti LaBelle. Or I've watched you and you look just exactly like Wendy Williams when you were doing her. You look just like Dionne Warwick when you were doing her. And so I'm not sure. I know who I like to do on the spot, that kind of stuff. But there's so many different variants from people. I have folks that said they like Cher, and this a lot of people love Melania Trump, and they don't even know they have. They just as soon as they see me doing it, they have to see it. A lot of my impressions are visual. Because like Richard Pryor, I like to bring it to life. I like you to see it. And but I, you know, I have impressions that I can do if I'm being seen or if I'm not being seen or whatever. If I'm on a show like a radio show like now, I think my favorite radio show impressions, or it could be live. My two favorites are, I think. Because then when I started doing other impressions, I'm like, oh, yeah, I really like doing Diana Ross. Or I really like doing Sarah Vaughan. Or I really like doing Fantasia. Or, you know, so, but I like on the spot when somebody say, well, do one of your favorite impressions. All I can think of is Whoopi Goldberg. I love doing Whoopi Goldberg. If Whoopi was here right now, so she was on the show with us, this is probably how she would, this is what she would say probably. Excuse me. It's morning time, so imagine Whoopi just waking up. Hey, good morning, Russell. Hey, how are you this morning? How's it going?
Oh, it's going fantastic.
That's good. I love your whole positive attitude. And then, so, you know, I have my favorites, and then the public has their favorites. And it's, you know, it's fun. It's fun.
Well, I want to tell you, knowing you for all these years and knowing your accomplishments, you're a very, very humble woman, but
oh,
you're a very, very talented woman. And what
I'm
I love
sorry.
About you, what I love about you, mm-hmm. Sylvia, that you don't give up. You keep it moving, and you have so many contacts with people that are comedians that came before you. You watch the comedians get to be in a different place, and they still came in contact with you. When you celebrated your anniversary, and you had the anniversary at the hotel down in D.C., and Be There magazine was there.
Yep.
It was so impressive because you had Monique come in from out of town, and she didn't have to do that. So you have a rapport with comedians that you still hold true today. What makes Monique give you such good props? I mean, why other comedians may not do what she do, but she's big enough star, but she has not forgotten about you. What does that say about her, and why do you think she's so appreciative of your work?
Well, I can tell you this. We were and I love this story. I almost cry every time I tell it. I was in Vegas. I had been hired to host the Play Awards at the Mandalorian Hotel in Las Vegas. And I knew the next time I went to Vegas, I was going to go see George Wallace, who's also a really good friend of mine now. But this particular night, we were off from rehearsal. We didn't have to rehearse. So I said, I'm going to go see George Wallace. And a friend of mine I saw him. He was out there for the awards as well. And he said that he had just left the Monique show because she had her own residency. And she had invited him back that night to open her show. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go and see I'm going to go and support my buddy, and then I'm going to go see George tomorrow night. So I went to the Monique show, and Rodney Perry, who's also a pretty much famous comedian, had me seated in the VIP section because I wanted to watch my buddy. I'm trying to think of the name that he uses on stage. He calls himself the petty comedian. At any rate, Rodney and I sat down to eat before the show, and he said, you know what, Sylvia, Monique is going to love what you've been doing. She's going to love you. Did you just watch what I tell you? Your history is stellar. She's going to really like it. So to make a long story short, when Monique finished her show, he went over to her because he was hosting her show and told her I was in the audience. And she came over and she said, how you doing, Miss Sylvia? I just wanted to let you know that I am so excited that you're here. You know what I'm saying, my love? And then she said, come on in the back. Come on to my dressing room. So I got up and went back to her dressing room with her. And she set a chair so I could sit down. And then she set the chair that I was sitting in right in front of her, set her chair right in front of me. And what she was about to say, Russell, was mind-blowing. She told me, she said, have you ever heard of a woman? And she told me the lady's name. The woman was born in, I think it was 18. She was born in like 1890. I have the story, the whole story written down. I didn't know I was going to tell it this moment. But anyway, Monique said, she was almost like a rap singer back then, and she reminds me so much of myself. So I decided I would start promoting her. And she looked at her whole staff. She had everybody in the dressing room, her hairstylist, makeup artist, her security guards, her road manager. You know, she just had her whole team right there in the room in that Vegas hotel. And she looked at all of them, and she said, didn't we just talk about this morning? So she said, Miss Sylvia, Lucille Brogan, that's her name, that's the lady's name. She said, Miss Brogan came to me this morning. I don't know where she came, because, you know, she's deceased. And she said she knew that I had been promoting her. And she said, I'm going to send you the woman that you should be promoting. And Russell, she started crying, and she said, Miss Sylvia, you walked in the door. And I didn't know what to say behind it. I mean, that was such a riveting moment for me, you know, that she felt like this woman sent me so that she could start promoting me. And from that moment on, Russell, she invited me back out to Vegas. I did 9 shows with her. She said, I'm going to introduce you to Las Vegas. Everybody out here, while I'm at my residency, needs to know that you exist and that you're here. And every TV show, every radio show she did, every promotion she did, she took me with her. And I have, you know, people taped it. So I have, if you go online, you can see the tapes at the radio shows and the TV shows we did. And one thing about Monique, I can say this wholeheartedly from all the time I've spent with her. She told me, when I told her about my anniversary, she said, I'll be there. I said, really? She said, oh, I wouldn't miss it for the world. 50 years? And I didn't even know that you were out here doing what you were doing. She said, oh, I will be there. You just tell me the date and the time, Sylvia, and I will be there. I don't care what I have going on. I'll cancel it because I'm going to come to that 50th. Did you see her? Did you see her there?
She was there.
Russell?
Live and living color. She was there and stayed the whole time.
Yeah.
And stayed the whole time.
Stayed the whole time. And do you
didn't
know
make no cameo appearance. She stayed the whole time.
Yeah, it was not a cameo appearance. And do you know she took care of everything herself? We didn't have to bring her in, put her in a hotel, get her limousine. She said, Miss Sylvia, it's on me. I'll be there. And Monique and I have been friends since. We've been friends. I mean, when she calls me, and she gets so tickled when I call her because I keep trying to brag about her Oscar and all this. And she says, no, Miss Sylvia, I want to brag about you. Please let me brag you. Let me do that. And I don't care what nobody said. They took that woman through all kind of wax and mud and everything, and she talked about Netflix. And now that she is I told her I was so glad she was doing that because the first 10 years in the business, I didn't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get paid. Being a comic man, I went to Europe to entertain the American troops as a result of being in the Miss Black America pageant. You know who I tied with in the pageant? I tied with Bernadette Stanis, who is Thelma from Good Times.
Yeah, Bernadette Stanis. Yeah, she's still doing her thing.
Yep.
So
yes,
people are really appreciating you on this Facebook Live, the Ultimate Podcast, the DMV, pulling your eyelids open. People are on this Facebook Live like crazy. You have a ton of fans. A shout out to Myrtle, Juicy Fruit. You've got Joy Platter. You've got Short Tays in the house. I mean, people are listening to this because they love what you're doing. Charles Carter and Ann.
Where you said it's on Facebook Live?
Oh, yeah, the podcast is broadcasting live on Facebook at this time. Matter of fact, we might want to bring some people on to talk to you. If they want to come on, they can come on. I'll see if we can add them on and they can talk to you live. But this is the ultimate podcast in the DMV. There is no podcast like this podcast. We've been doing this over 30 years, and we're making sure that people know where the ghost can get it, boy. We give you straight talk, no chaser. It's information that's hard to swallow. But it's an honor and a privilege to have a woman of your caliber on our Newsmaker line. I was honored to give you an Oscar before the pandemic at the Christmas Party of the Year.
Yes.
And you,
that
was a serious Christmas party. And you took time to come. And it was all that and a bag of chips. So it was really, really awesome that you did that. But I want to thank you for doing that. And I want to thank you for your work and what you have done as far as a comedian. When the pandemic's over, and I'm going to be doing some events on Thursday, and I'll be doing the Be There Magazine Black Card events coming back. And we'll be doing some things that's going to be phenomenal in this city. But you're going to be a part of it. And anything we can do to catapult your career to another level. We also are looking for more sponsors for the show. So basically people who have businesses, they can now come and do what they want to do on the show. We've got Sylvia live. Now you can see her live on the podcast. Sylvia, again.
Hey there.
Everybody said, Sylvia now is live. You can see her live on the Ultimate Podcast, the Ultimate Podcast. Sylvia.
Yes.
The comedians today that are doing it, still doing it, with the specials and the actual events that they're trying to produce, is it real expensive now to do a show without an audience? Sylvia. Can you hear? Is it real important to do a show now? Is it hard to do a show? Sylvia Traymore her screen froze, but it's an awesome, awesome time to do what I call a comedic time in the DMV. The DMV is a place where you want to do comedy, because comedy now is what they call awesome. I mean, comedy is always going where it's supposed to go. Sylvia, you still there? This is the ultimate podcast. Bring it to you straight talk, no chaser. It's information that's hard to swallow. We want to continue this with people that really supposed to know where to go, who to call, and how to get there. We're going to close the podcast out at this time. We'll be here on Monday mornings called Straight Talk, No Chaser. Information that's hard to swallow. Pulling your eyelids open. We do it every morning. And it was a pleasure having Sylvia Tramore on the air. And spread the word about this show. It's all that and more.
Been forwarded to an automatic voice.
Sylvia, can you hear me still? Yeah, I was talking, and then all of a sudden, I couldn't hear you.
And then I said, let me go on. I went to look at the Facebook, and then I saw
what
you had invited, so I clicked the invite. I said, maybe I'll be able to hear him, and then I could hear.
Well, you, I could hear you. I could hear you when you clicked something, then it stopped. That was my first time trying that, but it worked out good anyway. I got most of the show online, so
I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. Just at the end, I couldn't hear you.
But I'm gonna do some more shows. Like, this is my first time doing it on Facebook Live along with the radio. But it was a good idea because it worked.
I got
so many people that was clicking in, listening, and it was awesome. One. So I'm gonna text the link to you. You can see the whole show online.
Okay.
You're great, baby. It's awesome, baby. I'm gonna develop this podcast more. I've been doing it over 30 years, but I'm gonna develop it now for internet purposes. You know, like start doing it live on the internet. Bringing people on, having people call in.
Well, I'm going to go watch it.
Okay, baby.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, baby.